All right, get this. Today, we are diving deep into synthetic diamonds. I mean, you sent over some fascinating facts about these things. They're grown under immense pressure, harder than anything we know, can be used as quantum sensors. They're biocompatible, and get this, you can't even tell them apart from the real deal just by looking. So where do we even begin with all of that?
Well, what I think is so captivating about these synthetic diamonds is that they're not just about sparkle anymore. You know, the bling, we're talking about some serious game changers. Like, they're making waves in all sorts of fields, from cutting-edge tech to medicine and even quantum computing. It's really remarkable.
Okay, so you mentioned intense pressure. How intense are we talking? Like, give me a sense of scale.
Well, imagine the pressure at the Earth's core. That's the kind of force we're talking about to create these diamonds in the lab. We're essentially replicating, you know, speeding up the conditions where natural diamonds form, but instead of millions of years, we're doing it in a controlled environment.
Wow, that's just mind-blowing to me. We're basically fast-forwarding geological time to create these gems. And I'm guessing that pressure has something to do with why they're so hard.
Absolutely. That pressure is the key. It forces the carbon atoms to bond in this super tight tetrahedral structure. And it's this structure that gives diamond the title of hardest known material.
So just to be clear, if I took a synthetic diamond and tried to scratch it with, say, another diamond, neither would be damaged.
You got it. That's exactly why we see diamond tip tools revolutionizing industries that need extreme precision and durability. I mean, think about delicate surgeries or drilling for oil miles below the Earth's surface.
Okay, that makes sense. Hard, durable, incredibly useful. But then you mentioned quantum sensors. How do diamonds go from, like, cutting rocks to the realm of quantum physics? That's a big leap.
Yeah, and this is where it gets really cool. Sometimes there are these tiny imperfections in a diamond structure. You know, often at the atomic level. And while a jeweler might consider those flaws, scientists see them as opportunities.
Opportunities. For what? What can a flaw in a diamond possibly do?
Believe it or not, these defects can actually detect magnetic fields at the quantum level. Think about it. The ability to sense the tiniest magnetic fluctuations. That opens up possibilities in all sorts of fields, like medical imaging. We could have way more detailed and accurate scans.
So instead of just a blurry image of, let's say, your brain, you can see the activity of individual neurons firing.
Exactly. Or imagine using these sensors for navigation, creating systems that are far more sensitive and accurate than anything we have today. That's the potential of quantum sensing with diamonds.
That's truly remarkable. So we've gone from super hard tools to potentially revolutionizing healthcare and navigation, all thanks to these tiny imperfections. But there's one more thing you mentioned that I'm still trying to wrap my head around: diamonds being biocompatible. I mean, how can something so hard be safe inside the human body?
You know, that's one of the most surprising things about diamonds. Because they're essentially pure carbon, they don't trigger your body's immune system. It's like they're invisible to your body's defenses.
So they don't set off any alarms. They don't get attacked by your body's immune cells.
Not at all. And this biocompatibility, it opens up all sorts of possibilities for medical implants. You've probably heard of artificial heart valves, for example.
Right. I actually read about how they're using diamond in heart valves to make them last longer. What other kinds of implants are we talking about?
Well, their hardness and wear resistance are also ideal for joint replacements. Imagine a hip replacement that could potentially last a lifetime because the material is just so durable.
That would be incredible, right? No more worrying about your artificial hip wearing out. So essentially, we're talking about diamonds that can cut through rock being put inside the human body to help us heal and live longer, healthier lives.
I know, right? It really highlights how incredibly versatile this material is, and honestly, we're only just beginning to explore its potential in medicine and beyond.
Okay, now for the elephant in the room. You said that lab-grown diamonds are indistinguishable from natural ones to the naked eye. So does that mean I could be wearing a synthetic diamond without even knowing it?
It's entirely possible. They both possess the same brilliance and fire, the qualities that make diamonds so mesmerizing.
So how on earth can you tell them apart?
Well, it takes a trained eye and some specialized tools. Gemologists use powerful microscopes to look for subtle differences in the growth patterns and inclusions, you know, those tiny imperfections we talked about earlier, within the diamond. There are also advanced spectroscopic techniques that can analyze the diamond's chemical composition and reveal its origin.
So you need to go beyond just looking at it. You need to really analyze its structure and makeup.
Precisely. And as technology advances, so will the techniques for distinguishing between natural and synthetic diamonds. And this is crucial, you know, for maintaining the integrity and transparency of the diamond market.
Speaking of technology, something's been on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, you mentioned that these flaws in a diamond structure, the ones that make them good for quantum sensing, are often at the atomic level.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean we can actually control those flaws, like engineer them?
That's a great question, and it's one that researchers are actively exploring. Imagine being able to engineer those defects precisely, tailoring them for specific quantum applications.
So instead of just relying on naturally occurring defects, we could create them on demand, essentially making diamonds even more powerful tools for quantum technologies.
That's the idea. And it's this level of control that could really unlock the true potential of diamonds in quantum computing, communication, and who knows what else the future holds. All right, let's talk mRNA vaccines. These things have, like, completely changed how we approach medicine. They've given us this incredibly fast and adaptable way to protect people from all sorts of diseases. And the way they work, it's pretty fascinating. They use these chemically modified mRNA strands, and these strands are encased in these tiny packages called lipid nanoparticles. And basically, these nanoparticles deliver instructions to your cells telling them to make viral proteins.
So it's like giving our cells a set of blueprints on how to defend themselves.
Exactly. The mRNA in these vaccines acts as a blueprint, instructing your cells to produce a harmless piece of a virus. And this triggers an immune response, basically prepping your body to fight off the real deal if you ever encounter it.
Okay, that makes sense. And we've seen how effective that strategy has been with COVID-19. The rapid development and deployment of those mRNA vaccines was incredible. So you're essentially like hijacking your own cells to build immunity. It's amazing how scientists figured out how to manipulate these cellular processes.
It's truly remarkable, and the potential applications of mRNA vaccines go way beyond just infectious diseases. Researchers are now exploring their use in cancer therapy, autoimmune diseases, even allergies. The possibilities seem endless.
It sounds like mRNA vaccines could be a total game changer for healthcare in the future. Now, switching gears completely, let's talk about ultramarine pigment. This pigment has a fascinating history, one that really intertwines art and science. What can you tell us about this vibrant blue hue?
Ultramarine is one of those substances that bridges the gap between art and science in such a captivating way. You know, historically, it was derived from lapis lazuli, a semi-precious stone that was prized for its intense blue color. And what gives ultramarine its vibrancy, that incredible intensity, is this unique molecular structure containing complex sulfur species.
So it's the way these sulfur molecules interact with light that creates that stunning blue color.
You got it. And because of its chemical complexity, ultramarine was incredibly difficult and expensive to produce back in the day. I mean, we're talking really, really pricey. That's why it was so highly valued by artists. Think about some of the most iconic paintings, like Vermeer's Girl with a Pearl Earring, that brilliant blue in her headscarf. That's ultramarine.
Wow, it's amazing to think that something as simple as a color can have such a rich history and a complex chemical backstory.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that the world around us is full of hidden wonders, and that even the most familiar things can hold secrets just waiting to be uncovered. Now, let's shift gears again and delve into the world of polyketides.
Polyketides. That's a new one for me. What are they and why should we care about them?
Polyketides are a class of natural products, and they're truly remarkable in their diversity and complexity. They're synthesized by bacteria and fungi through these incredibly elaborate enzyme assembly lines. And these assembly lines, they build intricate carbon frameworks.
So it's like nature's version of a factory,
mm-hmm.
with each enzyme playing a specific role in constructing these complex molecules.
That's a great way to put it. And the really fascinating thing about polyketides is that many of them have potent biological activity. Some are powerful antibiotics, like erythromycin, which has been a lifesaver in treating bacterial infections. Others have anti-cancer properties, like doxorubicin, which is used in chemotherapy.
So by studying these natural assembly lines, could scientists potentially learn how to create new drugs and therapies? It's like getting a glimpse into nature's laboratory and figuring out how to build these complex molecules with incredible precision.
Exactly. And that's why research into polyketide synthesis is so exciting. It holds the promise of new treatments for a wide range of diseases. Speaking of promising treatments, have you heard about brown fat and its role in thermogenesis?
Brown fat, isn't all fat bad for you? I'm definitely intrigued.
That's a common misconception. Most fat stores energy, but brown fat actually burns calories to generate heat.
Mm.
And it does this through a process called chemical uncoupling in mitochondria, you know, the powerhouses of our cells.
Hold on. So most fat stores energy, but brown fat burns it. How does that work?
It's pretty cool. Brown fat is packed with mitochondria, and these mitochondria contain a special protein called UCP1. And this protein, it basically disrupts the normal flow of energy production in the mitochondria, causing them to release energy as heat instead of storing it as ATP, which is the cell's energy currency.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So our bodies actually have a type of fat that's designed to burn energy and generate heat. That seems counterintuitive.
It might seem that way, but it's a clever way to regulate body temperature, especially in cold environments. And it's not just about staying warm. Research suggests that brown fat might also play a role in metabolic health and weight management.
So activating brown fat could be a potential strategy for treating obesity or diabetes.
That's a question that scientists are actively investigating. There's growing interest in developing therapies that can stimulate brown fat activity, you know, boost metabolism and potentially help people lose weight or better manage metabolic disorders.
That's exciting. It's incredible to think that something as seemingly simple as fat could hold the key to treating these complex metabolic disorders. Now, let's talk about zebrafish. They might seem like simple creatures, but they're incredibly valuable for scientific research. What makes them so special?
Zebrafish are remarkable. They've revolutionized many areas of biological research, including toxicology. And one of the things that makes them so valuable is that their embryos are transparent. So scientists can actually observe development in real time.
So researchers can watch as organs form and tissues differentiate within these tiny developing fish. That's incredible.
Exactly. And because zebrafish share a surprising amount of genetic similarity with humans, what we learn from studying them often has direct relevance to human health.
It sounds like zebrafish are a gift to developmental biologists and toxicologists. Now, let's talk about something that sounds a bit intimidating. Superacids. What are they exactly, and why are scientists so interested in them?
Superacids are fascinating. They're like the extreme athletes of the acid world, pushing the boundaries of chemical reactivity. They're incredibly strong, far exceeding the strength of conventional acids like sulfuric acid or hydrochloric acid. We're talking millions, even billions of times stronger.
Wow, that's some serious acidity. So what makes them so powerful? What sets them apart from regular acids?
Superacids are incredibly good at donating protons, those positively charged hydrogen ions. They do it with incredible ease. This makes them incredibly reactive and allows them to protonate substances that were previously thought to be inert, things like hydrocarbons.
So these superacids can trigger reactions that wouldn't normally occur with regular acids. It sounds like they could be pretty dangerous if they're not handled properly.
You're absolutely right. That's why they're usually used in very controlled laboratory settings. But despite their potential hazards, superacids are incredibly useful tools for chemists. They're used in a variety of applications, from catalysis to organic synthesis. They're helping us to create new materials and to understand the fundamental principles of chemical reactivity.
So it's like having this incredibly powerful tool that requires careful handling, but can lead to some remarkable results.
That's a great way to put it.
Oh.
And speaking of powerful tools, what about microwave chemistry? Have you heard about how it's changing the way we conduct chemical reactions?
I have. I've heard it's much faster and more efficient. Is that right?
Absolutely. Microwave chemistry has really revolutionized the field. It leverages the power of electromagnetic radiation to speed up reactions, often leading to higher yields and more efficient industrial processes.
So instead of heating a reaction flask on a hot plate for hours, you zap it with microwaves and it's done in minutes.
That's the idea. And it's not just about speed. Microwave heating can also improve the selectivity and purity of the products, which is a huge win for making chemical processes more environmentally friendly and sustainable.
So it's a win-win. Faster, more efficient, and better for the environment. Now, this next topic sounds almost too good to be true. Plastic-eating enzymes. Are these enzymes really a solution to our plastic pollution problem?
The discovery of plastic-eating enzymes has been a huge breakthrough in the fight against plastic pollution, that's for sure. And these enzymes, they're produced by certain bacteria, and they have this remarkable ability to actually degrade PET plastic. You know, PE is one of the most common types of plastic waste out there, and it's incredibly persistent in the environment.
So instead of sending all this plastic to landfills or trying to recycle it through those traditional energy-intensive methods, we could use these enzymes to just break it down.
Exactly. It's a much more sustainable and environmentally friendly way to deal with plastic waste. Imagine a world where we can simply break down plastic waste into harmless byproducts, all thanks to these amazing enzymes.
That does sound like a dream come true. Are these enzymes being used on a large scale yet?
Not quite yet. There are still some challenges, you know, like scaling up production and optimizing the enzyme's efficiency. But research is moving quickly, and there's a lot of optimism that these enzymes will play a major role in solving the global plastic pollution crisis.
That's really encouraging. Now let's talk about metal organic frameworks, or MOFs. They've been generating quite a buzz in the scientific community. What are they, and what makes them so special?
MOFs are relatively new on the scene, but they've definitely stirred up a lot of excitement. They're basically porous crystals, kind of like tiny sponges at the molecular level with incredibly high surface areas.
So they're like molecular sieves.
That's a good analogy. And their unique structure gives them this remarkable ability to store gases, act as catalysts, and even deliver drugs with incredible precision. They're incredibly versatile materials with vast potential applications.
It sounds like MOFs could be game changers in a lot of industries, from energy storage to medicine to even environmental remediation.
Absolutely. And they're already being explored for all sorts of applications. It's a rapidly evolving field, and MOFs are a prime example of how material science is pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Okay, get ready for this one. It's a bit mind-bending. Liquid helium and superfluidity.
Superfluidity. That sounds like something straight out of a science fiction movie.
It really does. Liquid helium is one of the most bizarre and fascinating substances in the universe. When you cool it down below a certain temperature, something incredible happens. It enters this state called superfluidity, where it flows without any friction whatsoever.
Hold on. It flows without any resistance. How is that even possible?
Superfluidity is a quantum mechanical phenomenon. That means it operates under the strange and counterintuitive rules of the quantum world. At those ultra-low temperatures, the helium atoms start behaving like waves, not particles, and they can all occupy the same quantum state, which is mind-blowing in itself.
So it's like a liquid that just glides effortlessly without any energy loss.
Exactly. And because of this, superfluid helium has some truly mind-boggling properties. For example, it can climb walls. It can even flow uphill, defying gravity.
Well, that goes against everything we know about how liquids behave.
It's a perfect illustration of how the world at the atomic and subatomic level is fundamentally different from the world we experience with our senses.
Mind-blowing stuff. It's amazing how something as seemingly simple as liquid helium can reveal such profound truths about the universe. Now, let's talk about something a little closer to home. Perovskite solar cells. I've heard they're a promising new technology for renewable energy.
They are. Perovskite solar cells have emerged as a really exciting technology in renewable energy. They're based on a unique crystalline structure that converts sunlight into electricity with remarkable efficiency.
So are they like next generation solar panels, but better?
In a lot of ways, yes. They offer this incredible combination of high performance and low production costs, which makes them very attractive. And they're super versatile. They can be manufactured using a variety of methods, even printing. So they have the potential to be incredibly affordable.
It sounds like perovskite solar cells could be a real game changer in the fight against climate change.
Absolutely. The research is moving fast, and there's a lot of optimism about perovskite solar cells paving the way for cheaper, more efficient solar energy and helping us transition to a more sustainable energy future.
Now, this next topic sounds straight out of Nature's Design book, muscle-inspired adhesives. How are scientists mimicking muscles to create new adhesives?
Well, muscles are true masters of adhesion. They have this incredible ability to cling tightly to rocks and other surfaces, even in wet and turbulent conditions. And the way they do it is by secreting these special proteins that form incredibly strong bonds.
So scientists are taking inspiration from muscles for new adhesive designs. What kind of applications are we talking about?
Exactly. We're talking medical adhesives, engineering, even marine applications. Imagine surgical glues that can seal wounds quickly and effectively, or underwater adhesives that can repair ships or pipelines without welding.
It's like taking a page out of nature's playbook to solve human problems. It's fascinating how nature often holds the key to overcoming our technological challenges.
Couldn't agree more. And it's not just new technologies we can learn from nature. There's also a growing movement to revisit and reevaluate forgotten remedies from traditional medicine.
Forgotten remedies, like ancient herbal cures and things like that.
Exactly. It's fascinating how modern science is looking back at these ancient medicinal practices and finding new value in those traditional remedies. With all the advancements in analytical techniques, we can now isolate and characterize those active compounds in plants and other natural substances that have been used for centuries in traditional medicine.
So are we basically rediscovering the wisdom of our ancestors, blending ancient knowledge with modern scientific methods?
In a lot of ways, yes. And it's not just about validating traditional knowledge, it's about finding new leads for drug development.
So these ancient remedies could hold the key to treating diseases that have been plaguing humanity for a long time.
It's definitely a possibility, and it's a great reminder that nature is a treasure trove of chemical diversity and that we've only just begun to tap into its vast potential. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about chemical upcycling.
Chemical upcycling. What is that, and how is it being used to give new life to old materials?
It's a game changer, really. It's a completely revolutionary approach to dealing with plastic waste. Instead of just downcycling plastic into lower-grade materials, we can actually use chemical processes to transform it into something much more valuable.
So we're not just talking about recycling here, we're talking about turning trash into treasure.
You got it. Chemical upcycling involves breaking down plastics into their basic building blocks, the monomers, and then using those monomers to create new, high-quality materials.
That sounds incredibly sustainable and environmentally friendly.
Absolutely. It's a game changer that could really transform the entire plastics industry and help us move away from our reliance on fossil fuels.
Amazing. All right, let's move on to another topic that sounds like it's straight out of a science fiction movie, CRISPR, the Precision Genome Editor. I've heard so much about this technology, but what exactly is it?
CRISPR has been hailed as one of the most significant breakthroughs in biotechnology, and for good reason. It's a gene editing tool that's given scientists this incredible power to make precise changes to DNA, essentially rewriting the code of life.
Wait, are you telling me we can actually edit genes now? Like we're editing text on a computer.
It's not quite that simple, but it's getting close. CRISPR has revolutionized the field of gene editing, making it faster, cheaper, and more accurate than ever before.
The implications of this technology are enormous, aren't they? We could potentially cure genetic diseases, engineer disease-resistant crops, maybe even reshape the evolution of entire species. It's mind-blowing.
The potential is huge, and the research is moving at an incredible pace. But like any powerful technology, we have to proceed with caution and carefully consider the ethical implications.
CRISPR is a prime example of how science is constantly pushing the boundaries of what's possible, and it forces us to grapple with some profound questions about our relationship with nature and what it means to be human.
Absolutely. With great power comes great responsibility. We need to use these tools wisely and ethically.
Now let's talk about photocatalytic CO2 reduction. What is it, and how does it work?
Photocatalytic CO2 reduction is another really exciting area of research that has the potential to make a real difference in the fight against climate change. It's all about using sunlight to convert carbon dioxide into useful fuels and chemicals.
Wait, so you're telling me we can potentially use sunlight to turn a harmful greenhouse gas into something valuable?
Exactly. It's like artificial photosynthesis, mimicking the way plants use sunlight to transform carbon dioxide into energy.
It sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So what's the secret sauce here?
Well, we're using these special materials called photocatalysts. They absorb sunlight and then use that energy to drive the chemical reaction that converts carbon dioxide into other compounds, like methanol or methane.
So it's like a solar-powered chemical factory turning a problem into a solution.
That's a great way to put it. And it's attracting a lot of attention because it holds the potential to significantly reduce carbon emissions.
Okay, now for something that sounds straight out of a science fiction novel, high-entropy alloys, or HEAs, what are they and what makes them so special?
High-entropy alloys are fascinating. They're a completely new class of materials that are shaking up the world of metallurgy. And the way they're made is pretty unique. Instead of using one or two main elements, we combine five or more different metals in roughly equal proportions.
So it's like a metallic cocktail, blending different elements to create something totally new and unexpected.
Exactly. And the amazing thing is that these HEAs often exhibit exceptional properties that you wouldn't find in traditional alloys. They can be incredibly strong, incredibly resistant to wear and tear, and even stable at extremely high temperatures.
It sounds like these HEAs could have all sorts of applications in fields like aerospace engineering, power generation, even medical implants.
You got it. The research is still in its early stages, but HEAs are showing a lot of promise, and they're really opening up a whole new world of possibilities in materials science. Now, let's shrink down to the microscopic world of microRNA or miRNAs. These tiny molecules play a huge role in regulating gene expression, don't they?
I've heard of microRNAs, but I don't really understand what they do. Can you break it down for me?
MicroRNAs, or mRNAs, are like tiny switches that can turn genes on or off, fine-tuning the activity of our cells. They're like conductors of the genetic orchestra, making sure everything runs smoothly.
So they're super important for making sure our cells are functioning properly.
Exactly. And because they have such a significant impact on cellular function, problems with mRNAs have been linked to all sorts of diseases, including cancer, heart disease, and neurological disorders.
That makes sense. So if we can understand how mRNAs work, could that lead to new treatments for these diseases?
That's what researchers are hoping for. They're working hard to develop therapies that can actually target mRNAs and correct any imbalances in gene expression with the goal of curing or preventing these devastating diseases.
It's amazing to think that these tiny molecules can have such a profound impact on our health. Okay, let's move on to another material that's been making headlines.
Yeah.
Graphene. I've heard it called a wonder material. What makes graphene so special?
Graphene is incredible. It's a single layer of carbon atoms arranged in this honeycomb lattice, and it's incredibly thin, just one atom thick. But despite its thinness, it's stronger than steel, more conductive than copper, and super flexible.
It sounds like something straight out of a comic book. What are some of the potential applications of this wonder material?
Honestly, the possibilities seem endless. It's being explored for use in everything from flexible electronics to high-performance batteries to water filtration systems. It's a truly remarkable material.
Okay, so it's strong, flexible, and conductive. Sounds like a recipe for revolutionizing a lot of industries. Now, let's talk about a substance that most people associate with skin and hair color, melanin. What other roles does melanin play in our bodies?
You know, most people think of melanin as just the pigment that gives our skin and hair its color, but it turns out that melanin is way more than just a pigment. It also plays a vital role in protecting us from the harmful effects of UV radiation.
So it's like our body's built-in sunscreen.
That's a good way to put it. And recent research has suggested that melanin may have even more fascinating properties, such as the ability to convert light into electrical energy.
Wow, really? So melanin could potentially be used in solar energy applications?
That's a possibility that scientists are investigating. Melanin is a really remarkable molecule. We haven't even scratched the surface of all its secrets, and it's a great example of how nature can often surprise us with solutions we never could have imagined. Now, have you ever heard of ionic liquids?
I have, but I don't really know much about them. What are they and what makes them so interesting?
Ionic liquids are a fascinating class of liquids that are composed entirely of ions, which are charged atoms or molecules. And they're often called green solvents because they have a number of properties that make them more environmentally friendly than traditional solvents.
So they're like these super solvents that are good for the planet.
That's one way to think about it. Ionic liquids have negligible vapor pressure, which means they don't evaporate easily, so they don't release those harmful fumes into the atmosphere. They're also very stable at high temperatures, and you can recycle and reuse them multiple times.
It sounds like ionic liquids could be game changers in a lot of industries. I'm thinking chemical manufacturing, energy production, maybe even more.
You're absolutely right. They're already being used in a number of applications, and their use is growing rapidly. They're a fantastic example of how green chemistry is finding innovative ways to reduce our impact on the environment without compromising performance. Now, switching gears a bit, let's talk about vaccine adjuvants. They're a crucial part of making vaccines more effective, right?
I've heard the term vaccine adjuvants, but I'm not really sure what they do. Can you explain?
Absolutely. Vaccine adjuvants are basically substances that are added to vaccines to give the immune response a boost, making the vaccines more effective. And they work by stimulating the immune system, you know, kind of kicking it into high gear so it can recognize and attack the antigen in the vaccine. The antigen is that foreign substance that triggers the immune response.
So adjuvants are like the cheerleaders of the immune system.
That's a great way to think about it. They're a vital component of many vaccines and play a huge role in protecting us from infectious diseases.
It's amazing how we can fine-tune the immune response like that, making vaccines even more effective. Speaking of manipulating biology, can you tell me more about CRISPR gene drives? They sound pretty powerful, but maybe also a little bit scary.
CRISPR gene drives are revolutionary, there's no doubt about it. They have the potential to completely reshape the natural world, and they do this by using CRISPR gene editing to create genetic modifications that can spread incredibly quickly through populations, basically overriding the normal rules of inheritance.
So it's like setting off a chain reaction where a single modification can spread throughout an entire species.
That's it. And because of this power, CRISPR gene drives are being explored for a variety of applications, like controlling disease vectors, getting rid of invasive species, even reversing pesticide resistance.
The potential is enormous, but you're right, it does raise some serious ethical concerns.
Absolutely. Gene drives have the power to alter entire ecosystems. We need to be extremely careful and consider all the potential risks before releasing something like that into the wild.
It's a good reminder that powerful technologies need to be handled responsibly and with a deep understanding of the potential consequences.
Yeah.
Now, let's shift gears again and talk about chemoenzymatic synthesis. What is it and why is it so promising?
Chemoenzymatic synthesis is a really exciting field that combines the power of organic chemistry with the precision of enzymes. It's all about using a mix of chemical reactions and enzyme-catalyzed processes to create complex molecules.
So it's like a hybrid approach that harnesses the best of both worlds, traditional chemistry and the elegant efficiency of nature.
Exactly. It's proven to be a really powerful way to synthesize a wide range of molecules, including pharmaceuticals, agrochemicals, even biofuels.
And I'm guessing it's a more sustainable and environmentally friendly approach, right?
It is. Enzymes are incredibly efficient catalysts, and they often operate under mild conditions, so chemoenzymatic synthesis can often reduce the need for harsh chemicals and those energy-intensive processes that are so common in traditional chemistry.
It sounds like a win-win for both efficiency and sustainability. Now, let's talk about piezoelectric materials. What are they and what makes them so special?
Piezoelectric materials are unique because they can convert mechanical energy into electrical energy and vice versa.
So if you squeeze them or stretch them, they generate electricity.
You got it. And the other way around works too. If you apply an electric field to a piezoelectric material, it will actually change shape.
Wow, that's amazing. What are some of the real-world applications for these shape-shifting materials?
Well, they're used in a surprisingly wide range of devices, from sensors and actuators to ultrasound machines and even musical instruments.
That's incredible. One material with so many diverse applications. Now, let's talk about Swaterionic polymers.
Swaterionic polymers are another really cool class of materials. The unique thing about them is that they have both positive and negative charges within their molecular structure. And this gives them some special properties like self-healing and anti-fouling capabilities.
Wait, hold on. They can repair themselves and repel dirt and grime. What are some of the potential applications for something like that?
Well, we're talking about a lot of exciting possibilities here. Scientists are exploring them for biomedical coatings on implants, marine coatings for ships and other underwater structures, and even contact lenses that resist buildup.
It sounds like these Swaterionic polymers could be a game changer in a lot of different industries, from healthcare to transportation to manufacturing. Amazing. Now, let's talk about gallium. It's an element with some pretty bizarre properties, right?
Gallium is definitely one of the more intriguing elements on the periodic table. It's a metal, but it has a really low melting point. It melts just slightly above room temperature. In fact, you can melt it in your hand.
Wow, a metal that melts in your hand. That's pretty wild. What else makes gallium so special?
It has some really unique properties that make it useful in a variety of applications. For example, it's used in high-temperature thermometers, semiconductors, and even some types of LED lights.
That's really cool. So even something as seemingly simple as a metal can have a hidden side with all sorts of unexpected applications.
Now let's talk about thermochromic materials. I love the idea of materials that can change color. How do they work?
Thermochromic materials are pretty cool. They change color in response to temperature changes.
Yeah.
And they're all around us, from mood rings to thermometers to some paints.
So you can literally tell the temperature just by looking at the color of the material.
Exactly. And often the color change is reversible, so the material can cycle through a whole range of colors as the temperature goes up or down. How does that work? What's the chemistry behind this color-changing magic?
It all comes down to changes in the electronic structure of the material. As the temperature changes, it affects the wavelengths of light that the material absorbs and reflects, and that's what causes the color change.
It's incredible how those tiny changes at the molecular level can have such a big impact on a material's appearance. Now, let's talk about something a bit more fundamental. Prebiotic chemistry. What is it, and why is it so important to understanding life?
Prebiotic chemistry is the study of how life arose from non-living matter. It's a fascinating and complex field that explores the chemical reactions that happened way back on early Earth, those reactions that ultimately led to the formation of the very first biomolecules.
So it's like trying to go back in time, billions of years, and figure out how the first life forms emerged from that primordial soup.
Exactly. It's a tough field to study, but it's also incredibly rewarding because it addresses one of the most fundamental questions we can ask. How did life begin?
It's amazing to think that we can use the tools of chemistry to explore such a profound question about our own origins. Now, let's move on to something a little more explosive. Nitroglycerin. It's an explosive, but it's also used in medicine. How does that work?
Nitroglycerin has this fascinating and paradoxical history. It's incredibly powerful as an explosive, but it's also used in medicine to treat heart conditions.
Wait, so it can blow things up and save lives? I'm really curious about this one.
It can. Nitroglycerin works by dilating blood vessels, which can help to relieve chest pain caused by angina. It's a powerful drug that has to be used carefully, but it's been a lifesaver for so many people.
That's incredible to think about. Something as dangerous as nitroglycerin being used to treat disease.
It's a reminder that even the most dangerous substances can have beneficial applications. It's all about how we use them and the amounts we're exposed to.
Well, this has been an incredible journey so far. We've explored so much. The marvels of material science, the chemistry of nature, even touched on explosives. I can't wait to see what other wonders await us as we continue our exploration.
We've got plenty more to uncover. Everything from a material that levitates to the strongest material in the entire universe.
Sounds amazing. Let's take a quick break and then we'll jump right back into the fascinating world of chemistry.
Okay, are you ready for something truly mind-bending? Let's talk about pyrolytic carbon. This material actually levitates.
Wait, levitates? Like defies gravity? You're gonna have to explain this one.
I'm serious. Pyrolytic carbon is incredibly diamagnetic. That means it repels magnetic fields, and this repulsion is so strong that it can actually levitate above magnets.
That's wild. What causes that extreme diamagnetism? Is it just like a property of all carbon?
It all comes down to the unique structure of pyrolytic carbon. It's made up of these layers of carbon atoms, and they're arranged in this super ordered way, and that creates a really strong diamagnetic response.
So it's not just any carbon, it's this specific, highly ordered foam that gives it these unusual properties.
Exactly. And because of its unique properties, pyrolytic carbon has some incredible applications. It's used in artificial heart valves because it's so durable and biocompatible, and it's even used in spacecraft to protect them from that intense heat of atmospheric reentry.
Wow, a material that levitates is also keeping hearts beating and spacecraft safe. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of materials with unusual properties, what about nitinol? I've heard it called a shape memory alloy.
Ah, nitinol. It's a fascinating material. It's an alloy of nickel and titanium, and it has this crazy ability to remember its original shape. So you can bend it, twist it, even deform it completely. But when you heat it up, it springs right back to its original shape.
It's like magic. How does that even work?
It's all about how the atoms are arranged within the alloy. At cooler temperatures, the atoms are arranged in a way that allows the nitinol to be easily deformed. Yeah. But when you heat it up, those atoms rearrange themselves into this more stable configuration, and that's what makes it snap back into shape.
That's really incredible. Sounds like something out of a science fiction movie. What are some of the real-world applications for a shape-shifting metal like that?
Well, because it's so biocompatible and has this unique shape memory property, nitinol is often used in medical implants, things like stents and bone plates. You'll also find it in robotics. That ability to change shape with temperature makes it perfect for creating actuators and other moving parts. And even some eyeglass frames are made from nitinol.
Wow, that's amazing. So versatile. Okay, let's talk about cold welding. Isn't welding all about using heat to melt metal together?
Well, you might be surprised to learn that you can actually weld metals together without any heat at all. It's called cold welding, and it's a surprisingly effective technique, especially when you're working with those really delicate parts that might be damaged by high temperatures.
So how does cold welding work? If you're not melting the metal, how do you actually get it to stick together?
It all happens at the atomic level. Metals are held together by this sea of electrons that are shared between all the atoms. And when you press two extremely clean and flat pieces of metal together with enough force, their electron clouds can overlap, and that creates a bond between the atoms.
So it's like the atoms on the surface of the two pieces of metal are reaching out and grabbing onto each other.
Exactly. And because there's no heat involved, there's no melting or distortion of the metal, That makes cold welding ideal for joining those delicate parts in electronics, aerospace components, and even jewelry.
That's fascinating. Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk about Lichtenberg figures. They're those beautiful branching patterns you see on surfaces after a lightning strike.
Ah, yes. Lichtenberg figures are amazing. They're essentially electrical discharge patterns, and they can be incredibly intricate and detailed, almost like works of art created by nature.
So lightning can be an artist.
Yeah.
How does it create those intricate patterns?
Well, when lightning strikes a surface, it unleashes this massive surge of electricity that flows through the material, and that leaves behind a trail of ionized atoms and molecules. And those ionized particles can then react with the surrounding material, causing permanent changes in its structure and color, and that's what creates those intricate Lichtenberg figures.
That's incredible. Okay, prepare to have your mind blown one last time. Let's talk about nuclear pasta, the strongest material in the universe.
Nuclear pasta is mind-boggling. It's this theoretical type of matter that scientists think exists deep inside neutron stars. And neutron stars are the incredibly dense remnants of collapsed stars. They're home to some of the most extreme conditions in the universe. And this nuclear pasta is thought to be the strongest material in existence, way denser and stronger than anything we could ever create here on Earth.
This is hard to wrap your head around. What makes this nuclear pasta so strong?
Well, neutron stars are so incredibly dense that the protons and electrons in their atoms are basically forced to combine and form neutrons. And then those neutrons are packed together so tightly that they form this material that's incredibly dense and resistant to compression. And that extreme density, that neutron packing, is what gives nuclear pasta its incredible strength.
It's almost impossible to imagine the forces at play inside a neutron star.
Okay, let's come back down to Earth for a minute and talk about something a bit closer to home. Smog. We've all seen it, but what is it exactly and why is it a problem?
Smog is a type of air pollution, and it's a major issue in cities around the world. It's that hazy mix of pollutants you see, mostly ozone and particulate matter, and it forms when sunlight reacts with certain chemicals that are released from things like cars, factories, and other sources.
So it's not just ugly, it's actually harmful to breathe.
Exactly. Smog can cause all sorts of health problems, from respiratory issues and eye irritation to cardiovascular disease. And it's not just limited to cities. Smog can travel long distances, affecting air quality in those rural areas too. That's not good. So what can we do to combat smog?
It's going to take a multi-pronged approach to really tackle smog. We need to reduce emissions from vehicles and industries, promote public transportation, and encourage the development and use of cleaner energy sources. Even something as simple as planting trees can make a difference. Trees can absorb those pollutants and help improve air quality.
It's a good reminder that protecting air quality is everyone's responsibility. Okay, for our final topic today, let's discuss chemophobia. It seems like a lot of people are anxious about chemicals these days. What are your thoughts?
I get it. Chemophobia is a real thing. And it's understandable why people are concerned. We're constantly bombarded with messages about the dangers of chemicals, but it's important to remember that everything is made of chemicals. Water is a chemical, air is a mixture of chemicals, even our bodies are incredibly complex mixtures of chemicals.
So how do we get past this fear of chemicals and develop a more balanced and rational perspective?
Education is key. We need to learn about chemicals, understand their properties, and make decisions based on scientific evidence rather than fear. And we also need to remember that the dose makes the poison. Even too much water can be harmful. And many chemicals that are considered dangerous are perfectly safe in small amounts.
So it's all about context and recognizing that chemicals aren't inherently good or bad. It's how we use them and how much we're exposed to that matters.
Exactly. We need to move away from this black and white thinking about chemicals and embrace a more nuanced perspective.
That's a great point, and I think it's a perfect note to end on. This has been an incredible journey through the world of chemistry. We've covered so much, from levitating materials to the strongest substance in the universe. What an amazing adventure.
It's been a pleasure. The world of chemistry is full of wonders just waiting to be discovered. So keep exploring, keep asking questions, and always stay curious.
Great advice. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon to explore more wonders of the world around us. Until then, keep those brains buzzing.